This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neal Conan. A lot of Americans can still remember a time when whole families gathered around the TV set to watch their favorite shows. From Bonanza to The Cosby Show to Friends, TV watching was a communal experience, and anyone who wanted to participate had to tune in according to the schedule devised by the major networks. The advent of the VCR put a dent in that model more than 20 years ago, and then came TiVo. And just recently, the major networks announced some changes that give viewers even more control over when, how, and what they watch. ABC is now offering small screen hits like Desperate Housewives and Lost on an even smaller screen, the iPod, for the low cost of $1.99. Earlier this month, CBS and NBC announced they will make some of their primetime shows available, also for a fee, through on-demand TV providers. It's still uncertain if, in the long run, viewers will foot the bill for TV programs they can get for free, or how the networks will hang on to the all-important advertising dollars. But everyone agrees there's no turning back now. Later in the program, while you and your luggage are screened before getting on a plane, most airline cargo isn't, and we'll take your questions on that. But first, TV and technology. How do you get your programs? Do you still watch primetime TV during primetime, or do you TiVo? Would you be willing to pay for shows on demand? Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, TOTN@NPR.org. To start us off, we're joined now by David Kiley, the marketing editor for Business Week, who's been covering these developments. He joins us from NPR's bureau in New York City. Thanks for joining us, David.
You're very welcome, Lynn.
So there's been a rash of these announcements where the TV networks are offering content in new ways just this week. Warner Brothers also said they'll provide old shows like Welcome Back, Kotter for free. Why is this happening all of a sudden?
They are scared to death. That's, fear is a great motivator. Actually, all of these deals, you know, for example, the idea of putting Welcome Back, Kotter on the internet or Falcon Crest, this is not what I would call a game-breaking industry development. What they're doing is a lot of experimenting. The networks and the big studios that own all these shows have a problem. You and I and a lot of the people we know are doing what's called time shifting. We are not running our lives and our consumption of entertainment and communications around the schedules dictated by network executives. We're creating our own schedules. And they don't know quite how to monetize this shift. In other words, their whole business model is based around you and me and the fellow behind the glass here, you know, coming together at a certain time to watch a certain show, and then they like to count our eyeballs and charge advertisers for how many eyeballs they can attract. That model is rapidly going out the window because you and I have very different schedules and we like to control it ourselves and not let somebody else do it for us.
But it's really the only model that's still in place in terms of business. I mean, it's still, they're still doing Nielsen ratings. They're, you know, they're still basing, aren't advertisers still paying based on,
and nobody's happy about, nobody's happy about it. I do not conduct an interview in any week on my beat with an advertiser or one of the big media buying agencies who doesn't tell me in the course of the conversation that Nielsen ratings are, you know, that they're not happy with it. It's a dysfunctional way to do business, but it's the dysfunctional way that they've all agreed upon until they can come up with something better.
All right, well, let's talk about how some of these new options are going to work. This on-demand option, which is being offered, you have to do it through, I think, this either Comcast cable or DirecTV. Mm-hmm. I mean, how does it work exactly?
Okay, for example, CBS did a deal where they're going to put CSI on Comcast on demand. Now, I use this service all the time now. For example, if you subscribe to HBO, which I do, you get for free all of the, you know, series, the HBO series are stacked up on Comcast on-demand menu. So at any time of the day or night, on my time, I can go into this big shelf, if you will, this big digital shelf, and I can watch the episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm that that I missed last Sunday because I couldn't be in front of my TV set at 10 o'clock. Not only that, but if I happen to have missed the week before or the week before that or the week before that, they're all stacked up. I can watch three episodes of Curb Your Enthusiasm. I can watch as many episodes of The Sopranos as they want to stack up at a given time. It's all on my time. And since I pay for HBO, I get all that stuff for free. The problem that networks have is that the cable companies don't pay for their content. They don't pay to carry shows like CSI. So they have to figure out a way between the networks and Comcast, for example, for CBS to get paid. And this is going to be a per-charge thing. If I miss CSI or I forgot to tape it, I can pay Comcast, you know, whatever it is, 99 cents or $1.99 if I'm so inclined.
All right. So, and in order to do this, what is the consumer has to also have a device, right?
You have to have a digital video recorder. And the penetration for that is quite high. Right now, an estimated 10 million households have those DVRs. And that could be either a Comcast DVR or TiVo, let's say. And that number, that 10 million number, that's supposed to be more like 30 million households in about the next 5 years. And there's about 100 million. That'll be about a third of the country.
Well, joining us now is David Zasloff, and he is the president of NBC Universal Cable. And he brokered the deal with DirecTV, which will allow fans of shows like Law & Order to buy programs on demand. Mr. Zasloff is with us now by phone from LaGuardia Airport in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So is this just the beginning in terms of on-demand content, this what you've just announced is about to happen?
Yeah, I think it is the beginning. For the last 10 years or so, we've been playing around with a lot of new technologies, but consumers haven't really started to adapt to them. It's almost 50 years now where people are watching television, and they're comfortable just in this passive viewing mode. It's only in the last year or two that consumers are saying they want to personalize television. They want to just not watch what the best show is on at that moment, but they want to have other choices. And so this is one deal and one way to get consumers a choice to watch something else, watch their favorite show, Law & Order, if they missed it.
Now, in order to do what we were just mentioning, you have to have this digital video recorder or DVR, as it's called. To what degree do you know that people are willing to buy that and then pay for programs that, you know, they could watch for free?
Well, the DVR is really just one means to be able to either record content or, in the case of this new deal with DirecTV, acquire content. I think it's very likely that you're going to start to see more and more opportunities for people to acquire content. You see it with the iPod, where you can buy programming now and download your favorite show. You see it here with this DirecTV deal, being able to pick a show that you like and watch it for 99 cents. But as a content owner, we're really platform agnostic. Our objective would be to get our content in front of consumers in all the different ways that they want to consume it. So all of these new technologies that are trying to figure out new ways for consumers to view content, our objective would be to get our programming on there so that as consumers move to those platforms, if they do, our programming is there for them to watch.
Well, will it ultimately change the sort of traditional scheduling of network program, or will that simply remain the same for the couch potatoes who don't want to have to be bothered with any of this and just want to, you know, say, oh, you know, this show is on at 9 o'clock on Wednesday night. I want to watch it. You know?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to change too much in the next few years. With all the excitement about the new ways to offer content and capture it and view it, the overwhelming majority of people still view television in a linear fashion. They come home at night, and they put on their TV set, and they either go to the favorite show they're used to watching, or they click around and look for a better option. A lot of these new options are for early adapters, and I think it's important for us to stay ahead of that curve and to be involved in all these new ways. But on a practical level, the overwhelming majority of people are still watching television in a traditional way.
We're talking about new ways of watching TV on Talk of the Nation. The number is 800-989-8255. Let's see if we can get a call in before the break. Joe in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Go ahead.
Okay, my question is if they're going to be offering these programs online, are they going to be in a format that's like AVI or MPEG that you can actually transfer around to other digital devices like a handheld television device, or is it going to be some DRM-type deal where you can't really watch it, you have to watch it with this particular player, and you don't really have control over the data that you've paid for?
David Zaslav?
It remains to be seen. We're really in the very beginning. We're experimenting with, one, if we offer content for 99 cents or for $1.99 for programs, will consumers want to do that? Behaviorally, are they going to say, I want to make that purchase? If they do, we have to figure out which devices they want to see that programming on. And at this point, you mentioned downloading over the Internet. The deal with DirecTV is through the DVR on the traditional television set.
Yeah.
It's likely that you'll be seeing programming coming through the Internet, through the DVR, but in the near term, our objective would be to keep the content where it is. The more you can move it around, the more you have to deal with issues of piracy and peer-to-peer sharing, which could really dilute the value of content.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I mean, seriously, if you're broadcasting a television program live over our airwaves as a society, I mean, isn't it the same capturing that program and sharing it? Isn't it the same as taking a photograph of someone in public? I mean, you've utilized public airwaves.
Joe, we're going to have to, you know what, you're going to have to stay tuned for that answer, because we're going to have to take a short break right now, and our guests are going to stay with us, and we are going to continue this discussion when we come back from a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Neil Conan's away. We're talking about television and how it's changing. TV has moved from the living room to the palm of your hand. What used to be available only on Wednesday night at 8 can now be seen anytime, anywhere. What does that mean for the people who make their living in the industry and for viewers? Have you changed the way you watch TV? Give us a call, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And with us are David Kiley, marketing editor for Business Week magazine, and David Zaslav, president of NBC Universal Cable. We had a caller on the line just before the break. Mr. Zaslav, I think challenging you a little bit about, if I understood the gist of what he said, and perhaps you understood it better than I did, about charging people for what they can get for free over the broadcast network?
He was raising what's kind of a tricky issue, and that's if we put a show on the air, or if we sell content for 99 cents on the Internet or over some traditional device, the question is, once we sell that, we sell it for that one use. And the problem that he was suggesting is that there's piracy issues where someone would take that content and they could send it to 1,000 of their best friends, or they could view it and they can distribute it on the Internet and make it available to everyone else for free. So there is this very difficult issue when you're trying to offer content that you have to make sure that you're offering it to the person that's purchasing it, and you're not making it, by doing that, you're not making it available either on the Internet so that it's available to everybody, where it really devalues that content, or that could be sub-distributed to a big number of people. So we want to make our programming available so as many people can see it as possible, but we don't want to make it available in a format or in an environment where it becomes totally devalued.
Mr. Zaslav, before you joined the conversation, we were talking with David Kiley about what this means just in terms of the revolutionary effect this may have on the business, just in terms of the business model for television and advertising. I mean, this really shakes things up, doesn't it? I mean, how are you beginning to rethink the relationship between television and advertising, I guess, with these kinds of changes going on.
Well, it does shake things up, but again, at least in the near term, it'll have a modest effect, and it's exciting to advertisers and to us to experiment with a lot of these new applications. The question is, how much of an impact will they have? Some of the new technologies offer the content with commercials, and we've seen that in some cases people view the programming even more carefully when they view it in a different environment or when they pay for it. So it remains to be seen the impact it's going to have.
Go ahead.
There's a huge, huge issue going forward for the networks to sort out with the consumer, and that is whether all of this on-demand programming, whether it come through the internet, come through cable, video on demand, or an iPod, is pay-per-view or whether it's advertising supported. And I think the fact that, for example, you have CBS distributing programs with advertising in, but ABC choosing to charge pay-per-view and leave the advertising out, indicates that nobody's sure what the right model is going forward in terms of what consumers will tolerate. But one thing is for certain, at least so far as I've been able to ascertain as I've been writing about this, and that is, and I bet David agrees with this, that nobody wants an $800 a month cable bill.
Right.
Okay.
Yes,
so
I can tell you that.
That, to my view of things, necessitates that there be some advertising supported model for all of this going forward. The question is, how exactly do you do that, and how does all this evolve? Because the consumer is very much in control with DVRs and with the ability on the internet to block out, advertising that they don't want to see. And this is the big push and pull and tug of war and head scratching that's going on right now, is how to monetize this whole thing in a way that a consumer wants.
Well, David Zaslav, if I get what you've sort of been saying, you're sort of saying this is the beginning, and we're kind of trying to figure out right now where it's going to go from here and what people are really going to want. Is spending $1.99 for a show on your iPod what they're really going to want, or is that 5 years from now going to be passé?
Exactly. And look, advertising is what keeps the wheels turning for the NBC network and for the broadcast business and the cable business. So we are in the business of making advertisers happy and providing a platform that they're interested in promoting in and paying for to reach viewers. So that's really that's the key to our business. And so we do need to protect that because it is the essence of what we do. What we've been doing with these new experiments is trying to figure out, once people view our content in the traditional way, how else can we offer it to them so that they can see it in a customized way and in a convenient way? The consumers have been raising their hand. You can't stop technology and you can't stop consumer behavior. For many years, we didn't think that the way people watch television was going to change. But we have two things coalescing here. First, technology companies are saying, hello, I have a very interesting way for you to consume content so you can customize what you want to watch, when you want to watch it, and you can watch it on the go or in a different way. And consumers are raising their hand saying, I like that. Now, they're not all raising their hand, but there are a number of consumers raising their hand saying, I like that. And so our goal is to understand those technologies, understand that consumer behavior, and have a seat at that table with our programming. If we had our way, all of our programming would have commercials in it. The advertisers are our partners, and that would be a meaningful way for us both to continue to grow. The question is, when you purchase programming, is the consumer going to be comfortable? If you go to the store and you buy a DVD, or if you buy a pay-per-view movie from your cable operator or from your DBS distributor, and you download it, in the middle of the movie a commercial comes on, are you going to accept that? I think it would be a good thing for all of us if consumers feel that, for a lower price, they'd rather have commercials and everybody wins. But ultimately, the technology and the consumers will drive it, and we'll have to adapt, meaning we, the content owners, and we, the advertisers. We may have to work together in more creative ways. We may have to decide that there are certain windows that we're going to offer content without the advertiser because the consumer just simply won't accept it. But from our perspective, we love advertising. We'd like advertising to be a part of all of these platforms that we participate in. It's going to be driven more, I think, by the consumer and the technology. And we're on for the ride a little bit.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, David Zaslav. David Zaslav is the president.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being with us. I know you're at the airport, and I understood that you had to go. So I just wanted to thank you for being with us.
Okay. Thanks so much.
All right. David Zaslav is president of NBC Universal Cable, and he joined us by phone from LaGuardia Airport in New York City. And one question I have, David, Kylie, is we've been talking about how advertising may change. What about the production and distribution of programs? Is that going to change too? Will the network still produce the content, or will they be just distributing content?
I think they'll be both. I mean, I think they're going to continue to be both. You know, one of the things it's all in how you look at this business. The television networks still believe they're in the television business, and what I would argue, and what some of the media, what I would call sort of media experts, visionaries, have talked about the last couple of years, is that they're really in the video business. And there's a difference here. People increasingly do not care from where they get their video. They don't care where it comes from. What they do care is that they have control over it. And that's the big rub here. Is that, it's interesting. David said, and it might not be fair since he's not on the line anymore, but he said, we're in the business of keeping our advertisers happy. Think about that phrase. He did not say we are in the business of keeping our viewers happy. And that, I think, is all coming home to roost. TV networks are in the business of perpetuating themselves and perpetuating the business model that they've invested decades in. And that is putting programs on every night at a time that they determine, and then selling ads around it. And that model, despite what he said, and I have to, a bunch of networks had a press conference today saying the DVR is not the big bad boogeyman, and that, we have a lot of life left in us yet. I think that's true, but only if they're smart enough to extend their own lives and into this new era, that we're in.
Well, I just want to bring in another guest now because we want another perspective on the future of TV. So joining us now is Anthony Zeiker, and he is the creator and executive director of the CSI franchise. He joins us by phone from his office in Los Angeles. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Is there any sense among creators, the creative people, the producers, that this TV on demand could change the relationship between the networks and producers like yourself?
I think we're all getting used to the fact that television is an entertainment and content on the go is all changing. I've read a couple of articles as of late about the ratio between movies and DVD in the stores being about 3-month window. And essentially what's happening with the consumer is, they are really looking for convenience and content on the go at their leisure. Classic example is, I can think of off the top of my head, was just a pay-per-view on television for DirecTV. You'll have to wait till 9 o'clock to start the movie. Let's say it's Jarhead, rather than just order it right that second and begin to immediately watch it. It was the same thing, I think, with radio, where when Sirius Radio came on, it was a situation where we could get top quality radio with a bunch of different stations relatively quickly. And the downside of that was, as we began to subscribe, at least my wife and I, we kept thinking, well, why are there commercials? I thought this was this was commercial free. So it's going to be an interesting rub between the advertisers, getting their end, and for TV to be cautioned to not fall into the same trap that I think music did in the respect that where iPod essentially took credit for the music industry. And when you go by a song, on iTunes, you have no idea what the label looks like, what the cover of the album looks like. You just have an artist. You have La Vida Loca, Ricky Martin, 99 cents, period. And I think one of my fears as the creator of the CSI franchise is to have television content lose its identity, based on these other mediums of how you buy and purchase, programming on the go.
I know. I mean, don't you still need the networks, a network launch to really get a franchise like CSI, which is what it is now, going. I mean, you couldn't do it just by offering it out there in some way that we don't even, maybe can't even, I can't even imagine yet, but that people would just be downloading certain shows. I mean, don't you need a major launch?
It has to begin with, obviously, you know, the main medium, which is television. But, you know, television has changed so much. It used to be where you would check the programming and come to TV, and now people want TV to come to them. And that's the era that we're in right now, so it's all brand new. But there has to be a centralized method of getting the show and content to people, which is the television set right now. And now being able to spin that off into the consumer's convenience is going to be the trick without getting them into the things that we hate the most as TV viewers, which is, you know, the inconvenience of television. I'm sorry, inconvenience of commercials. That's why TiVo is such a great thing, and my wife's the biggest TiVo addict there is out there, because she can fast forward through the commercials and get back to her programming at her convenience. And a mini TiVo is going on in the industry right now in terms of content on the go.
I have a question for David, if I could.
Let me just remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
My question is that over the next couple of years, you know, it might take between 5 and 10 years. People are telling me anyway that there's going to be a great merger between the internet and the living room television, where, you know, if you will, if you can conjure this up in your head, putting your cable connection, you know, from the internet right into the back of your TV so that the whole World Wide Web is available from your Barco lounger and your big flat screen TV. A producer like you, what I look at in the future is, why wouldn't you develop a series for broadband distribution if people could watch it, you know, in a high quality fashion in their living room, and spin off a little group that actually sold ads, and your company collects all that revenue and maybe shares it with, you know, someone on the internet, but basically cuts the network out of the equation.
Well, I think that is the future. I think that's the future fear. I mean, you know, right now you have the big four, with ABC, NBC, CBS, and Fox, on top of cable, and you run the risk of somebody with some cash and some clout and some creativity to come along and do original programming, and airing it in that kind of fashion, where the internet, you know, your laptop and the TV now becomes, you know, it's synonymous and becomes one. So I think that is the inherent danger, I think, 5, 10 years down the road. And it'll be very interesting how the networks will react to that. But for now, you know, my sole focus is really putting outstanding content on CBS and helping them spin off into other mediums right now, and assisting them in doing that in this really interesting time.
All right, let me see if we can get a call in here now. Jack from San Francisco. Go ahead. Jack, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hey, thanks for taking the call. Yeah, I'm the CEO of a company called Alio TV, A-L-I-O, what you're talking about just now, it's perfect timing, is that we've developed a way to deliver high-quality video entertainment, whether it's movies or television shows, at an extraordinarily low cost over broadband to devices connected to the television. So, and we will actually be launching this service in 2006 with device partners who have PVR-type devices coming to market that are broadband-capable, that have high-definition capability. And so that reality that you said are 5 to 10 years down the road is now available basically today. The real question is getting access to the licenses for the content, so that, because this is whole thing has been designed from the beginning to be a legitimate service with rights management technology and protecting the rights of all the creators of the content and all the people in the food chain, so that people get paid accordingly, plus the flexibility of allowing, you know, paid for like an HBO-style model or advertising-based, where, in fact, the advertising can be very, very specifically targeted to the individual who's watching the show, which I think is actually probably one of the most exciting opportunities about the transition to broadband-based delivery, is the fact that not only does the consumer get an opportunity to choose exactly what they want, but the advertising-supported model may actually become much more interesting and much more acceptable. In fact, we actually dream of a day where you actually enjoy the ad that's going to come up because it's something that you want to know about.
All right, Jack, thanks so much for your call. We're heading towards a break. I don't know if you want to just respond to that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that what he's talking about is available right now. I just think it's going to take a while for the general public to become comfortable with this sort of access to new ways to view content. And because I think of my mother, who's a big CSI fan, obviously, and likes to watch television, it's going to take her a little bit to actually turn on the internet and begin to watch programming. And
so there's a whole cultural change that we're talking about, a cultural change going on. We're going to keep up this discussion. We return from a short break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Here are the headlines from some of the stories we're following at NPR today. China has confirmed 2 cases of humans infected by bird flu. China has been battling nearly a dozen outbreaks in several provinces, but until now only birds have been affected. And House and Senate negotiators have struck a tentative deal to extend the Patriot Act. The Patriot Act granted new powers to law enforcement in an effort to aid the war on terrorism. It's currently set to expire at the end of the year. You can hear details of those stories and much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. In a few minutes, we'll talk about major lapses in airline cargo security. A government report out today says most cargo on passenger planes is not properly screened for explosives. As we head into one of the heaviest travel weeks of the year, what are your concerns and questions about this? Give us a call. The number is 800-989-8255. Or you can send us an email at totn@npr.org. Right now, we're wrapping up our discussion about television and the changes going on there. I'm joined by David Kiley, marketing editor for Business Week magazine, and Anthony Zeiker, creator and executive producer of this CSI franchise. Mr. Zeiker, I want to ask you one last question, and it may have nothing to do with anything we've been talking about, but I keep thinking, will this affect production values in any way? When you're thinking about producing a television show that somebody may be downloading and watching on an iPod, on a tiny little screen, or a huge screen in their living room, I mean, does that affect content in any way?
That's an excellent question, because especially with my show, I feel like, you know, when you're watching, you know, CSI is so much about the minutia of science, and I think to myself, as you say that, you know, is some recutting of the show in order, in terms of making sure that these very small visuals are now life-size on a very small screen to appreciate, you know, the story point of science. For example, if you're snapping into an hair follicle to show the seed attached to the end of it, or that may just be a sort of a tight to medium shot on a normal television screen that may be 25 to 30 inches, when you're actually on an iPod video screen, you know, what's that going to look like? And have to make sure that the visuals support the actual structure of the screen.
Yeah, and I think I'm a little like your mother. I have a hard time imagining watching TV on an iPod.
Right.
But particularly CSI was one of the reasons I asked you that, because, in fact, you do those incredible close-ups and going into the body, and it seems like it wouldn't translate on something so
right.
small.
Right. I mean, I think my last thought of this whole subject is I just think the industry has to really be responsible in terms of the advertising mechanism and how that's handled in this new wave that we're in, because I feel that if you don't handle it now in a certain way and you start showing commercial-free, you know, programming, if advertisers start to pressure the networks and you have to go back to advertising, I think it may turn some folks off.
Okay. Anthony Zeiker, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Anthony Zeiker is the creator and executive producer of the CSI franchise, and he joined us by phone from Los Angeles. And I'm going to try and get one last question in here now. Philip in Akron, Ohio. Or I guess I've got Dennis in Denver, Colorado. Hi, Dennis.
Hi.
Go ahead.
They had mentioned that the on-demand pay-per content was only going to be available to people, to those with DVRs. And as a person with a DVR, I'm imagining that if I want to watch CSI, it's very, very easy for me to just record the entire series, ultra easy. So there is really no incentive, if I have a DVR, to go and pay for the program that I can already get very, very easily and watch at any time anyway.
Well, that's a big question, David Kiley. Isn't that one of the questions that's at the heart of this? And I think that they're all trying to figure out, will people pay for content that, in fact, they don't necessarily have to?
Absolutely. It's one of the things you're trying to sort out. And if you tape all those shows on videotape, you sort of have, or on DVDs, you have sort of an endless supply. If you're taping it on a DVR, that has a hard drive, at least for now, you know, the size of that hard drive is somewhat limited. You know, it's all about how cumbersome it is and how comfortable people are. I think there probably aren't that many people actually out there who would take the trouble to tape an entire series on DVD or on videotape. The DVR, to my thinking, it's made it so much easier, okay, but there is a limited capacity to those hard drives, at least for now. It's really all about what you're comfortable with. And you know, one of the things, this issue about Anthony's mother, you know, not being comfortable watching stuff on an iPod, that's true. I'm not either, but I'm 42, and one of the things that we know is that the younger you go right now, the more comfortable consumers are with that technology, with watching it on those things. And you know what? Those young consumers are the ones that are most valuable to who? Advertisers.
Right.
And so they are going to follow those young consumers wherever they go.
Well, and there's one little question about that that's been nagging me through this whole thing. It, you know, qualifies in the stupid question category. But if you do download it onto an iPod, and I don't think anyone's answered this yet, can you load it into a computer or load it into a larger screen so that you can watch it on a larger screen?
Right. If you're downloading off iTunes, for example, you can watch it on your computer or on your iPod.
Well, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see it on a larger screen. You don't have to watch it on that tiny screen.
Right.
And
you
strain
could watch
your
it
eyes.
On your, right. You could watch it on your laptop and store it, you know, and watch it when you're on a flight or something.
Yeah. All right. Well, David, thanks so much for being with us. It was fun talking to you.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
David Kiley is the marketing editor of Business Week magazine, and he joined us from NPR's bureau in New York City.